Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, and welcome to Focus on Al-Islam in America, featuring Imam Waridi Muhammad, the leader of the American Muslim Mission, the largest identifiable Muslim community in America. One of the things that we strive to do in our broadcast of Focus on Al-Islam in America is to educate the community that's watching us. That's you, the viewing audience. We strive to show you many of the keys to success in your life. The life of the individual is multifaceted. It's not only religious or what you might call spiritual, but it's also economic. It also has a social end. It also has a educational component. In Focus on Al-Islam, we're going to investigate all those areas of the human being's development and show you, the viewing audience, many of the ways that we, as a whole humanity, can uplift our communities, ourselves, our families. We would like to, as we begin our program, thank many of the sponsors, many of our commercial advertisers who have made this program possible. In this program, we're going to focus particularly on economic development. With us today will be that leader, Imam Waridi Muhammad. We pray that you stay tuned while we break for a commercial, and we'll be right back with Focus on Al-Islam in America. Thank you for joining us. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back to Focus on Al-Islam in America. This evening we're going to be interviewing Imam Waridi Muhammad in part two of economic development. As you know, Imam Waridi Muhammad is the leader of the American Muslim Mission. Imam Muhammad, I'm going to go right into the questioning. Before we, jump right there, let me ask you a question about economic development. What should be the central focus of the human being? What is the thing that should motivate the human being more than anything else?
The dependence. We believe that people got into material development because they had to provide for their dependents. When you marry and you have children, there you have dependents. And we have to, work at cultivating healthy family interests, healthy family concerns, bring the right sensitivities back for the family life. Because I think people will work for income, you know. We work for $500 a week, or less or more. But if we don't have an aim in life and a need that we're serving that's bigger than just getting the money, most of us can't continue to pursue income, you know. We find ourselves spending. We become spendthrifts, mm-hmm. you know, and we are wasted. But if we have some real concern at home, a wife that we care for, family, mother, father, grandparents, children that we care for, the family is what we need to keep in focus when we talk about developing economics.
In the study of history, Imam Muhammad, in looking back at the Nation of Islam under the leadership of your father, Elijah Muhammad, we find that he placed a strong emphasis on economic development.
Yes, he did.
Why was that?
Because I think he realized that the religion, the holy book, he taught it differently. In fact, he didn't do much teaching of the holy book at all. But I think he had the right understanding of the material importance or the material role that man has to also play, you know, has to accept in his life. And all of Elijah Muhammad saw his people, the African-American people, as people who had not really established themselves materially. They had no material basis. They were solely dependent upon society for material survival. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't like this, like Garvey didn't like it. And many other our leaders, they have addressed this problem. In fact, Dr. King, you know, he started off addressing civil issues. But in the last years of his life, he walked arm in arm with the garbage collectors because he saw too that there's a need to dignify work. And Honorable Elijah Muhammad saw that there was a need to dignify work, and his concept was great for reaching the uneducated and the man who has not been culturally developed. His method was very great for reaching him, because what he did was show physical structure, you know. So here is a masjid, here is a school, here is a restaurant, here is a grocery store, and there is a farm, you know, and we hope to have a cannery, you see. So he starts putting these physical entities into place, and they are great for exciting the interest of the human being. But what we didn't know is that these entities also require, such entities as factories and farms and et cetera, they require skill, they require research and knowledge and education, you see. So we were poorly prepared to really support the fast advancement that was made under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership in the 70s. That wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. It was the right thing. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was showing us that you're materially weak, you're not established materially, and you have to establish yourself materially. And that's dignity for you. That's dignity for your home when you have income, especially when you have income that you know you are responsible for, you know. I've gone on jobs, and I guess most of us have gone on jobs, and we were responsible to punch the clock. But we didn't feel responsible for the job. Somebody else had created the job. They had put the business there, and they had created the job. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is trying to get his black community to accept responsibility for even creating those circumstances and whatever resources that employment depends on. You see, that employment depends on. And he used to call that making the job for yourself, you know. He said you have to make the job for yourself. And I think that's what he meant. He meant controlling all of those circumstances that particular employment is depending upon. And again, I think the concept of nation, too, appealed to the African-American people because of the difficulty we have had living, coexisting with white man.
What do you mean
and
by that?
Living and sharing the blessings of America with white people, you know. We've had many difficulties. Many whites haven't accepted that. Even today, there are whites that don't accept that blacks be a part of America, equal part of America, and share and identify in America just as white person does, you see. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I think he knew that his concept of the nation would have great psychological benefits too, because it would bring those people who have become frustrated, who've given up in their effort to come into the mainstream of America's life, and to really identify with this country and its origin and its aspiration. I think he saw that there was a great market. There was a great market out there for his Nation of Islam, you see. I don't know if he had all these insights into his operation or not. I think that he must have, because he was a very sharp man. He was, a genius of social psychology. So I'm thinking that perhaps he did see also the psychological benefits in the kind of structure and program that he represented. And I think that maybe that's why he did say, we know we don't have the people, qualified people. Say, but we are not going to stop because we don't have the qualified people. We're not going to wait for 10 years to train people. We have to have this presence right now because of psychological value, you see. So I better stop now. I'm taking up too much time.
Yeah, no, fascinating. No, fascinating in terms of the depth of the development there, which leads me to the other question. Was that concept of self-development something that Elijah Muhammad conceived of himself, or did it have some other root or some other basis?
And the original concept of the Nation of Islam, the whole name was Lost Foundation of Islam in North America. Lost Foundation of Islam in North America. And it suggests that there was a Nation of Islam somewhere else, you know, other than in North America. So that whole concept, from its very inception, it accommodated the growth, the material growth of the black people. It treated the material ills, the financial, business ills, economic ills of black people from the very beginning. Yes, so the Honorable Elijah Muhammad received a package that was given to him by Farad Muhammad, who was a foreign-born man who identified with our holy book and with the religion, you see. But he came up with his own independent concept of religion and also his independent concept of how social problems, et cetera, and the problems of black people should be solved, you see. It was all his independent way. But I think what really made it successful was its ingredients of Quran, ingredients of Islam, the real religion, Islam, as it's commonly called, the ingredients of Quran. I think that's what accounted for the real successes. Because I came to see that really this emphasis in the Quran, without all of the racial connotations that we see in the Nation of Islam for old philosophy, you see.
So Quran at the root of the
very
development?
Yes, indeed. Because the Quran, its ideas, the Quranic ideas, addresses a kind of ambivalence that's in the makeup of the human being, where he thinks that he should operate this way in spiritual matters and operate in a double different fashion in material matters, and that he should have a spiritual moral and a material moral. But our religion shows that no, life is one, God is one, Allah is one, and creation is one, and life for the human being is one life. And Allah says in the Quran that he created you from the earth. Yeah, from the earth he bring you forth. Out of the earth he bring you forth. And to the earth he returns you. And from the earth there will be a resurrection. So, and Allah says, and he has made the earth the place for you together, the place for you to come together. You see? So these highly philosophical statements, the way I'm placing them in Quran, they speak to this need for man to see his origin in the earth. His origin in the earth. And if his origin is in the earth, then that means that he must grow materially. And if we look at everything that's working, operating, you know, you plant a seed, you expect a crop from the seeds you plant. What does that require? Require that you attend that. You have to spend time with it. You have to work with it. You have to protect it against bad influences, against harm. You have to use intelligence. You just can't have a crop without thinking. You can't go there and say, oh, I'm going to have a crop on emotions. I'm going to have an emotional relationship with my land, and I'm going to have a nice crop. You can't do that. You have to have an intelligent relationship with your land, and you have to get to know your land and know what your land needs, and then you have to give it what it needs. You have to respect its own needs. God has placed into that land needs, and he has placed into that seed needs. It needs environment, right environment. It needs earth. So we have to know the needs of the seeds. We have to know the needs of the land. We have to respect that. We have to have an intelligent approach toward farming, and then you'll get some results. You'll have success, right? So if it's an automobile, I want to drive an automobile. It's an automobile. I want to drive it. To drive it, I can't say I'm going to have an emotional approach toward driving this automobile, and I jump in there and kill somebody or kill myself, you see? I have to see what are the needs for operating this automobile. What are the needs in me too? I must be sober, my sight must be good enough and everything. So there are needs in me and needs in the thing that I'm going to be relating to, you see. Then I respect those needs. I have an intelligent approach toward it, and then I can successfully drive that vehicle. So we look at any function requires an intelligent approach. And when we're talking about the need for business development, economic development in the black community, we have to insist upon an intelligent approach. It's not a guess. It's not guesswork. You can't just throw on some fancy clothes and open a store and take two or three months savings, you know, and throw into a store and say, I'm gonna be successful at this. You have to study the needs of that business. You have to study your own needs. You have needs too in relationship to that business. And if you neglect what your needs are in relationship to that business, you will fail. If you neglect the business needs, you will fail.
Fascinating. Imam Muhammad said,
we're going to have to break to a commercial or a few commercials at this point. We would like to say it's our commercials that keep us on the air. We'd like to thank the commercial vendors who have contributed to the show. And right after we have a few words from them, we're going to come right back to economic development on Focus on Al-Islam in America. Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, and welcome back to Focus on Al-Islam in America. We have as our guest today, Emil Waris D. Muhammad. And we've been addressing the issues of economic development. Emil Muhammad, as it relates now to the your leadership now under the American Muslim Mission, we've come through the Nation of Islam and we saw tremendous strides in certain areas of economic development. But we also know that there's a phenomenal development as it relates to what's happening in the community of the American Muslim Mission in terms of new enterprises, new economic development, new moves as it relates to farmland, developments in terms of institutions, schools, libraries. What's the source of that?
For me, you know, I think the economic realities are perhaps the main factor, you know. We are living in, well, harder times, and harder times force you to speed up the process toward business development, economic growth. I believe for me, though, the main reason for my strong involvement now in the economic aspect of life is the Quran itself, the Holy Book. I find that in my study of the Holy Book, I find that man begins in creation with a mission to measure up to the capacity that God has put in him for shouldering responsibility. We may say managing responsibility. Allah says in Quran that he created the man and put him in the earth for him to be a caretaker, for him to be a custodian, a caretaker, or one accepting responsibility for the state of the environment that he's put in. And I find that that burden on man is what grows him in every respect. In fact, every other growth that we may experience, whether it's academic growth or whatever, it's the cost of responsibility being on us, that responsibility on us. And I understand that concept in the Quran to mean this, that Allah did not give the black man a different capacity for managing responsibility than he gave the white man or the yellow man or the red man. He gave all people the same capacity for shouldering or managing responsibility in the total environment, not just at home, in the total environment, in the earth, in the vast space of stars and influences. Allah has given us the capacity to manage whatever the situation is, whether it's home or in the earth or even in the heaven. That's my religion. That's what my religion tells me. This is our religion, Al-Islam, or Islam is commonly called. So I find that to be the strongest motivation in me, that really my life, the purpose of my life, is to grow into greater care of the responsibility that God has assigned to me until I have measured up to the capacity that he's put into me to manage responsibility. And if we don't approach material demands in our life in a very practical way and get involved and understand that really this is competitive, we live in the most competitive nation or the most competitive society on earth, America. In other countries, the demand on the individual to shoulder responsibility is not the same, you know. We speak of America as a land of opportunity. It is a land of opportunity. We speak of America as a democratic society. It is a democratic society. But democracy and freedom of this type, it demands more
of the individual than other forms of government, where things are centrally regulated, things are under one boss, you see, under a king or something, and the king is dictating policies, and he's looking out after the needs of the people. So he's deciding how many should go to this school and how many should get involved in this particular exploit or endeavor, you see. But over in America, nobody is doing that for you. You have to decide that for yourself. You're on your own. That's freedom. That's the concept of America, of freedom in America, is that you're on your own, you see. Well, that's dangerous. That's just a bad situation for most people, you know. I'm on my own.
That's dangerous, so you say.
For most people, it's dangerous to tell them they're free and they're on their own. People need supervision. God didn't bring us into the world as babies and say, hey, baby, you're free, you're on your own. He said, hey, baby, I produced you in mama's belly, in mama's stomach, and daddy was involved. So here's mama. And daddy too, maybe you can use him too. You can have some need for him too, you know. And he didn't leave us alone. He left us with two supervisors, right? They need that supervision to get started. After the baby gets started, and he's shown them direction, he has model, a role model there in mama, how he should handle life, how he should relate to life and environment. Then he has some direction. He has something to go on. So he doesn't go out there with nothing. He goes out there with something. God has given him some role models, you see. So when we say we are free in America, we must also stress this point, that yes, we are free, but man has not come to manage responsibility on his own. That God has made even speech, language required, that people live in a community together. You can't speak if you live separately. You put a baby out in the wood somewhere and don't let him get with other people, you'll never speak English. You'll never speak any language. You'll sound like an animal. You'll never stand, most likely. You'll never stand up straight on his feet unless you see other people in the environment doing the same. So Allah teaches us, or God teaches us through the social life, too. Through community life, he teaches us. And that's how speech comes about. And that's how many other skills come about. So we just can't tell people they're on their own. They need supervision. They need some supervision. They need some environment to live in that's conducive to that growth. The natural life, it comes up and it's conducive to that kind of growth. So we have to protect the environment to make sure that it's conducive to the growth. We have to also make sure that there are responsible people, a responsible role model to inspire that kind of growth and get some direction for it. And then we tell the person that your goal is freedom. And you have to go into it by degree.
That's right. Now, in terms of that kind of freedom as it relates to economic development, now, everyone has a different concept of economic development. If you ask the corporate executive, what is your idea of economic development, you might get a different response from, than if you ask a socialist what was his idea of economic development, or if you ask someone in the Bowery.
Yeah.
What is your idea of economic development?
That's true.
What's your concept of economic development?
Controlling as much as possible the resources and means of production.
So you're about controlling the resources?
Yes. Having, as Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, get some land. We need some land.
So are we still talking about land these days?
Economic growth.
That's crazy.
Yes. Land. You need to own something. You can be a part of the economy without that. But in order to command an economy, or to command economic circumstances, you need some land. You need natural resources. You need a base, natural base. You should own that. To be a factor in the economy is different. Now, what we're advocating is not just being a factor in the economy. We're advocating economic base. And economic base requires land. You don't need that much land, but you need something that could demonstrate, something to show that you can manage the material circumstances, the material demands on life, that you can accept those, you see. So if you have some land, then say if you only got cattle on there, like some of the Muslims here in Whitaker, in Bronx, they're interested now in getting some cattle, you know. And having their own halal meat,
you know? Well, that's, to me, that's economic. Mm. Because you have your own land, you raise your cattle on that land, from your cattle you get the top products, the hide and the hides of the animal and other products perhaps. So this is the beginning of an economy. Now we know we belong to the economy we call the American economy. We belong to that. And whatever we do, an economic base, we will do it with respect for the whole economy of America, you know. And this is important too. But we know the circumstances, the environmental demands on us, you see, no matter what we're doing. If it's economic, if we're going to develop the economic base, then we have to understand America's economy. And I think a lot, I took advantage of about 15 months I had in seclusion to study economics. And I got a very good idea of what we call government and private economics, micro and macro economics. I got a very good general idea of how it operates. So I would be concerned to know that whatever economic base we are going to develop, that we understand that in this part of the world, that economic base must complement the economic pattern we call America's economy. I see the definition of economic growth or not economic development being the ability to own land, real resources, natural resources, to own land and to develop those natural resources and to control as much as possible the resources and also the production, the resources and the production. Now, the higher your success is at that, then the stronger you are economically speaking, the stronger you are. That's why the giant industry, they have natural resources that they own in the country and outside of the country. And perhaps from that particular position, they go into building other kinds of operations, you know, transportation, whatever. And they try to supply whatever that particular environment is, that basically is, they try to supply it from their own resources. Now, all the time, you can't do that. You have to depend on somebody else's resources. You have to buy products, raw materials, from somebody else. Well, you know, I don't know of any businessman, of any industrialist, the one who's invested in the economy, who has achieved the level of efficiency in economics, where he can say, my business, or my operation is supplied by my resources only, my natural resources only. I don't have to go outside of my natural resources for anything. And I don't have to go outside of my employees for anything. I don't have to go outside of my manufacturing for anything. But I say, what should be the object? Mm. The object should be to reach the maximum efficiency in terms of managing, owning, managing, and controlling all the factors of production.
Tremendous. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank our guest, Imo Wasi Muhammad. We're going to go to a commercial in a very few minutes. Before we do go to a commercial, we would like to, first of all, thank our sponsors once again for making this show possible. It's only through their gracious commercials that we're able to bring this very, very informative program to you. Once again, folks in Al Islam try to address many of the issues that face contemporary America. Today, we'll be dealing with economic development. And once again, we'll be right back. Stay with us and don't go away. To focus on Al Islam in America, we've been interviewing the leader of the American Muslim Mission, Imam Warisuddin Muhammad. Imam Muhammad, you were speaking in the last segment about economic development as it relates to the community, and in particular the American Muslim Mission. Can you talk about or expound on some of the economic development changes that have been going on in the American Muslim Mission that exemplifies your concept of economic development?
revise your concept of economic development?
let's go back to the period before I became leader. During the 60s, late 60s and 70s, early 70s. I would say, well, most of the 60s and early 70s. We had certain business operations, restaurants. We had restaurants in New York, restaurants in Chicago, and in some of the other big cities. And in Chicago, we had a grocery store. I don't know, I think in New York, too, we had a grocery store. Yes. And that's how it began. But that wasn't, in my opinion, that wasn't economic development. That was business development.
There's a difference?
Yes, sir. That was business development. But when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad started talking about buying farmland and producing things on the farmland that he would bring to his market, to his followers, to his market, and sell raw and processed, that's economics. That's economics. So
it always ties the land.
Economics is tied, yes. Economics is the concept that brings to mind ownership and control of production. Ownership and control of production, controlling production. So in my opinion, when Ali Elijah Muhammad began to buy farmland, he was getting involved in economics. When he was operating business at restaurants and grocery stores, he was just involved in business, and I mean small business at that. But when he began to talk about land, buying land, and growing our needs, he said, let us produce our own needs. So he's talking about ownership of resources and control of the products until they reach the market. That's economics. He's talking about also supplying the labor. So he was talking about controlling as much as possible all the factors in the production, you see. So to me, that was economics. So he was right when he said, I have an economic plan for the black man. He was right. At that point, he was right. And what we have now is an effort to get back to that kind of interest. We have many people with businesses. They are not centralized anymore, so we don't speak of the American Muslim Mission as a business operation. It's not. The American Muslim Mission is really a community. In that community, we have mesquites, we have schools, and we have business operations. The mesquites are under the administration of the school, of Hotmiyah, under the imam. The schools are under principals, working directly with imams, with the regular imam. Businesses are under individuals. We separated business from mesquite operation for many reasons. Some people say that wasn't wise, but they don't know the whole story, you know, and they're just talking. Anybody can talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes. Yeah. we believe that there is opportunity for business growth in this country. And we believe that the nature of American American society dictates that if you're going to conduct business, you should conduct them with respect for the religious, for the business principles of American people. You see, so but we have a community though, and we have an advantage as a community. We got many people in the community who are unemployed. They need employment. We got many people in the community really want to learn skills, and they want to learn agriculture. They want to learn carpentry. They want to learn. You see, they want to learn skills. They want to have the knowledge. So if we go back to that idea of really building an economic base, Sedalia property in Sedalia, North Carolina.
Which property is that exactly?
That's in North Carolina. It was property that was purchased for the boarding school, high school, and college training, teacher college training, you see. But there's about 40 acres there. That's a lot of land. And some of that land can be cultivated. Say if the students allow to participate there.
So you're saying that that's one of the properties of the American Muslim Mission?
It is.
That you physically own that property and you have a school there?
Yes, and purchased recently. Recent purchase.
40 acres?
Yes, 40 acres. So if that land is developed now, and say we start with just maybe some garden produce, maybe just produce, garden produce, you know, vegetables. The children who go to high school, if it's made a requirement that they also work there, they'll get a much richer experience, school experience, than children who just look at the turnip green in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Next time they see it, it's in a frozen packet. It's on the plate. So if we can develop that piece of land and use it also as an educational experience for the students, and at the same time try to produce so that whatever's produced there will feed the staff, feed the children lunch. So that's economic tourism.
Because
you got the land and using land to feed the staff, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So they won't have to go out to shop in the market. During the seasons when you're not growing, and the crops are not growing, you can can the harvest, put your harvest in, can it, preserve it, put it in jars or something. And when you're not growing, they can be eating some jars. Same food that was grown there. This is an idea of the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad. Idea. This is the idea. So we have a community of people, so we should try to take advantage of this opportunity to really function as a community. We have people out of work. Those are people who are ready. They're ready just to be employed for something, you see. So the collective idea is what we are really promoting now. Doing things collectively. Buy collectively. And not only that, approach the need for business, stimulating business and stimulating growth in the community. Approach it collectively. I don't have any money, you don't have any money, but if all of us sit together, we have labor, we have that, we have labor, and if all of us labor, our labor can bring a little income, and if all of us pool that income, as Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to say, he said, why don't you pool these small resources you have? You don't have much, but if you pool them, they will account for something, you see? So then we begin to pool the little earnings that we have, the income that we have above our basic needs and emergency, we pool that. Now we have become a collective investor. So we can invest collectively, you see? So we can do many things collectively that is impossible for us as individuals or as families. So this is the concept, and we are not the first to do it. Out of the country has been done, and we have some other religious groups in the country who have long ago been practicing the same thing. The Mormons and many others in this country, they practice their community living. And that's the answer for poor people who don't have job opportunities and don't have investment opportunities because they don't have the connections or they don't have the resources, the capital. They don't have control of financial institutions. They don't have a share in the financial institutions. So they're at the mercy of those people who do. And what we can do is live collectively and progress collectively, and we can come out of the difficulty that we're in. I'm not saying we can be rich because that's not the object. The object is to at least make ourselves financially a business community that's progressing, that's stable, and that's sustaining itself. The self-help idea that you mentioned earlier.
Now, on that, I understand that the American Muslim Mission has a kind of drive by, I think it's called the American Muslim Mission Committee to purchase 100,000 commodities.
Yes.
How does that work?
It works it's the same concept that I just mentioned. It's a collective buying concept. Actually, it's the American Muslim Mission collective buying concept. And it will work the same way. If every member in the community would purchase certain clothing items that they need, that
like
all of them need.
Church, that
yeah, like church, well, whatever it is, you know. Maybe you want new pants, but it'll be something. You need pants or something. Whatever it is, a purchase that needs in a one-time purchase year, for the year, a one-time purchase. If we get every person in the community that has need for that item, and we find out what item they are mostly, most of their members are in need of, so when we make that purchase, now we are purchasing as a joint cooperation with purchase. So we get the same benefit. We get the same purchase benefit that a joint cooperation would get, you see. So in turn, we will experience a great reduction in cost for every member who made that purchase. Now that reduction in cost for every member who made the purchase is also a saving for that person to use that money that he saved in some other place. You see? So we can improve our economic situation, our financial situation, with this kind of program. Now, if we start talking about appliances and even automobiles and other items, which is good, then we're talking about really getting people, making it possible for people to go into business. They won't be able to get the benefit from this concept. But say if you're a member of the community and you have the investment power to make 100 purchases, 1,000 purchases of one item. You can take that. You know you're going along. I know you're going in conjunction with other members of the community who also have enough investment capital to make that kind of purchase. So you will make that kind of purchase, and you won't have the privilege of selling to the members, because this idea, concept, is strictly for the members, and no profit. There's no profit in this to be made.
No whatsoever.
No profit. The only profit is to the individual. Reduction of cost for the individual. No profit to anybody. But as a businessman, you can take advantage of this. You're a member of the community, so you have the opportunity too to make a purchase. So you make, instead of one purchase, two items, you will buy maybe 100 or 1,000. And you then will rent a store with a loan or with someone else who also bought large purchase. You open a store and you will get your tax ID and you will operate a business. And you now have been given the opportunity to go into business and compete, not to undercut anybody. I don't believe in that. I don't think any person in business to try to undercut the market. I think that's the ugly thing in the system, where people get something real cheap and then they try to undercut the market, you know. You can do it for a while, but you just rake off a lot of money, and pretty soon the economy will stabilize itself, because things will come into operation right away to deal with that problem. So my advice would be, if anybody gets this opportunity, not try to undercut the market, but just sell at market price, sell at the normal market price. And this will give our business people in our community, who otherwise wouldn't have this opportunity, an opportunity to open up a business and not say buy from this business because it's black, or buy from this business because it's Muslim, but buy from this business because it's a business.
And not on ethnic terms, but because it's sound.
Because it's sound.
It sounds like almost that the individual would have the buying power of a large Macy's department store.
I don't know. Not that. I don't envision the individual having that kind of power, buying power. But I think a combination of businessmen could get together and have that kind of buying power. Not Macy's, maybe one of the local Macy's, not all the Macy's.
It
takes us a long. We have to work at a long time.
It feels like you're on the tractor. Yeah.
Oh, this is the way to do it. Believe me, this is the way to do it. And what we want is economic, I start to say recovery, but we've never been there, so it's not recovery. We want economic life, you know, a chance to live in the economy of America.
Brother Imam, with that, there are different kinds of systems that exist, economic systems, you know, throughout the world. What kind do you ascribe to, if there is one? You have Marxism, you have communism, you have socialism.
Free enterprise.
Free enterprise.
Definitely so. I think my religion dictates that I support free enterprise.
So that pretty much takes you to the religion, which is also functional?
Certainly.
In America?
The free enterprise system is the only system that I can support as a Muslim.
Mm-hmm. So that's almost incumbent in the religion?
For me it is.
For you it is.
And I believe for most of the learned people in religion it is, yes.
Mm-hmm. Would that be something that you would recommend for Muslims throughout the world? Or is it, you know, particularly
yes.
American situation?
No. I would say that most of the Muslims throughout the world do support or subscribe to the free enterprise system. It's not quite developed as we have it here, because you know, the society is more complex and highly competitive, or more competitive than those small economies are in the Islamic world. But it's only in a very few places do we find what we might call a communist concept of business and economics. Very few places. In fact, I know of no place, no Muslim country that's really following the guidelines of hardcore socialist economics. I don't know of a place. And Libya doesn't even make this sense.
Fascinating. Brother Emanuel, we must close out at this point. We've been speaking with Emanuel Warafi Muhammad. The conversation is just so tremendous that there's absolutely no time to really explore all the dimensions of it. But I think we've really began to give some insight to you, our viewing audience, of the possibilities that exist for economic development within the scope of the religion of Al-Islam. We thank you for viewing, and we pray that you join us next week when Focus on Al-Islam will come to you again. As-salamu alaykum.